Good morning, everyone. I'll call this regular meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission to order. I'm Chair, Vice Chair Ann Wyatt stepping in for Chair Steve Lieberman, who couldn't be here today. And so with that, we will get this going, and if the clerk will please call the roll.
Yes, good morning. Commissioner Shaw?
Here.
Commissioner Avila?
Here.
And Chair Wyatt?
I'm here. And then we'll move to this flag salute, if everyone will please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And with that, I'm going to go through just a few meeting protocols for anyone who hasn't been to one of these meetings before, so you know how we run these things. And so speakers are asked to address the commission as a whole. So if you're going to come up for public comment or any comment up here at one of the podiums, please do address us all directly, not the audience, and address comments to the chair. Public testimony should focus on the item before the commission and avoid repetition. And am I going to read all this? I guess I, okay. We'll be fine. We'll be fine. Be decent and stick to the point at hand. And I think we can dispense with the rest of this paragraph. Along with that, any public comment on items not on the agenda? Anybody like to bring anything to our attention that's not agendized today? Any speaker slips? Okay. With that, we'll close public comment, and we'll move on to item two, planning staff and commission updates. Staff.
Good morning, Chair Wyatt. Eric Hughes, Division Manager, Current Planning, here to provide the commission with an update on recent Board of Supervisor actions of commission interest, and then a preview of your upcoming schedule. Before I do want to announce just to the public that there is an active phishing campaign going on right now where people are trying to impersonate the County Planning and Building Department or the Planning Commission, and they're requesting payment of fees via wire transfer. Please remember, the county does not request wire transfer payments. Official emails will come from a county address, which is at co.slo.ca.us. If you or your clients receive a message like this, please do not respond. And you can forward it to your planner, or you can also forward it to the district attorney's office. Eric Vitale in the district attorney's office, his email is evitale, which is E-V-I-T-A-L-E at co.slo.ca.us. And if you have any questions, again, you can email your planner, but do not respond. All right, with that, moving on to Board of Supervisor actions of commission interest. The only thing that we have is from this last Tuesday, March 24th, the board did move to adopt the annual ordinance cleanup. And that included, this was previewed before the commission back on December 11th, 2025. The one of the main items there was that 1,000-foot hearing notice requirement for projects outside of an urban reserve line. And so the board did approve to adopt that 5-0. All right, now looking ahead to your future commission meetings, the next scheduled meeting is April 9th. At this time, we just have one item, which is a request by Verizon Wireless for a conditional use permit to allow the construction and operation of an approximately 98-foot-tall faux windmill wireless communications facility located within the residential suburban land use category in the Carrizo Plain planning area, approximately 4 miles north of the Carrizo Plain National Monument. The next meeting is May 9th, and on that date, we currently, again, have one item, which is a request for a vesting tentative tract map, tract 3218, to subdivide an existing approximately 11.5-acre parcel into 46 residential lots, ranging from approximately 4,200 square feet to 6,000 square feet, and three open space parcels ranging from 2,200 square feet to 120,000 square feet. It also includes a conditional use permit for site development related to the construction of 46 single-family attached dwelling units and 23 twin homes. And then, of course, other grading and improvements. The project does request two adjustments. The first is an adjustment from the public improvement standards to reduce the curb return radius from 30 feet to 29 feet, and an adjustment to the public improvement standards to utilize a 4-inch rolled curb. That concludes staff's updates. I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Any questions for staff?
Just confirming then, the 23rd is canceled. April 23rd meeting.
Commissioner Shaw, that's a good question. I was looking at my calendar and I do not have any items. So I'll confirm that before we end here today and get back to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks for checking on that, right, and confirming that. Any other questions for staff? Okay. And with that, we'll come to commission updates. Any items that you'd like to bring to the attention of staff or the public? I'll mention one, put in a plug for a free workshop that our agency, Smart Share Housing Solutions, is putting on in Paso Robles on April 8th, a Wednesday in the evening. It'll be a free workshop for homeowners on how to build ADUs. So if anybody out there is interested in ADU construction and needs some tips and ideas, more information is available at smartsharehousingsolutions.org. Again, that's a long, clunky one, smartsharehousingsolutions.org. And with that, I'll close and move to the consent agenda. We have one item on the consent agenda, meeting minutes from January 22nd.
I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Okay, and before we take action on that, do we need public comment on the minutes? I think we do. So let's just backtrack for just a moment and open up public comments on the consent agenda. Anyone there to comment on our minutes from January 22nd? Guessing not, I will close public comment. And we have a motion still on the table and a second. And with that, if the clerk will please call the roll.
Commissioner Shaw?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
And Chair Wyatt?
Yes. excuse me. With that, I'll close consent agenda and move on to the hearing items. We do have an item that's been added here in the last days to the agenda. And so it is a continued hearing to consider a request by Norgrove Gardens LLC for a conditional use permit to allow the phase construction of a new winery and distillery facility with a shared tasting room, a special event program of up to 20 events per year with 150 guests, use of an existing tram to provide wine tasting and public tours of the vineyard and exterior use areas. So that's county file number NDRC 2024-00038. And this item added last minute, it's a request for a continuance again. So what's our process here?
Yes, Chair Wyatt, Eric Hughes, Planning and Building. The applicant, we've requested to continue it off calendar. They're working on some updates to the project description. It's just hard to know when exactly we would be ready to come back before the commission. So we are requesting a continuance off calendar. And it is, you know, the commission's prerogative to take a vote on that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So before we take a vote on that to continue it off calendar, is there anyone here from the public who would like to speak to this? Any representative from that project or member of the public would like to speak to the continuance? Good morning.
Good morning, Jamie Jones, representing Norgrove Gardens. And we would just request the continuance off calendar so we can refine our project description and we'll go through noticing again so that the neighbors and public will be noticed for the hearing whenever it's set. So thank you.
Thanks for coming. Any questions for Ms. Jones?
Okay. Chair Wyatt, just a quick note that the requirements of the Brown Act were satisfied as this notice was posted more than 72 hours in advance.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else from the public who'd like to speak to this item? Okay. Seeing no one, I'll close public comment and bring it back to the commission.
I'll move to approve the request for continuance.
Off calendar.
Off calendar.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay. And with that, if the clerk will please call the roll.
Commissioner Shaw?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
And Chair White?
Yes. Thank you for that. Okay, we'll move on to hearing item number 4. So if the clerk will please tell us what that is.
Yes, thank you. Hearing to consider a request by Buena Fortuna LLC for a variance to allow grading on slopes in excess of 30% for the construction of a new approximately 2,180 square foot three-level single-family residence, which will include an attached accessory dwelling unit, 796 square foot non habitable basement, 443 square foot two-car garage, and a 477 square foot deck. This is county file number NDRC 2025-000110, and this is in Supervisorial District 2.
Thank you. Any ex parte disclosures on this item? One. Okay. Nope, none for me. And so Eric, Mr. Hughes will please introduce the project team. We'll hear from staff.
Yes, Eric Hughes, Planning and Building, presenting this item. Today we have Planner Andy Knighton. In support, we have Supervising Planner Nicole Ellis, myself, Eric Hughes, and then, of course, County Council and Public Works in the ring as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Good morning, Chairperson Wyatt and members of the Commission. My name is Andy Knighton, Project Manager with the County. And today I will be presenting an overview of the proposed variance request. The project before you today is a request by Buena Fortuna LLC for a variance to allow grading on slopes in excess of 30% to allow for the future construction of a single family residence. The project will result in the disturbance of the entire approximately 3,700 square foot vacant parcel. The proposed project is located on Richard Avenue within the community of Cayucas. It should be noted that the project is not located within the coastal appealable zone, and therefore discretionary review of the future residence is not required. The parcel is located within the residential single-family land use category. Adjacent land uses include residential single and multifamily and rural lands. Here's a view of the parcel with aerial imagery. You will see the site is currently vacant and surrounded by other single family residences that are built out from property line to property line. This slide shows the slopes that cover the site. The areas in red represent slopes over 30%, and yellow represents slopes between 10% and 30%. The project site is entirely located on slopes over 30%. Here's a site photo of the existing vacant parcel as viewed from Richard Avenue looking west. From this image, you will find that the project is a steep downsloping lot. Here are street view photos of the site from Richard Avenue looking north and south. Related to the next three slides, the site plan, floor plan, and elevations, it is important to note that the project is not located within the coastal appealable zone. Therefore, development of the future residence would only require ministerial construction permits. Therefore, the site plan and building elevations are provided for the purpose of demonstrating existing site topography and the extent of proposed grading. The scope of the variance request is limited to the grading on slopes in excess of 30%. Shown here is the proposed site plan. The red outline is the future single-family residence and ADU. The subject property is highlighted in green, and the county right-of-way is highlighted in blue. The extent of the future driveway is highlighted in yellow. Shown here is the proposed floor plans for the upper, lower, and basement levels. And this slide shows the elevations for the proposed future residence and ADU. Prior to today's hearing, 8 public comment letters were received. Concerns were primarily related to grading and construction temporary impacts that are related to noise, vibration, staging, vehicle parking, construction practices, and site and emergency access. Conditions were suggested in some of these letters to address the impacts. Some letters also contain comments related to the design of the project, including the driveway design, facade, basement, and parking. To address these comments, we met with the building department, including the Stormwater Division and Public Works staff on March 25th, 2026, and recommended conditions for a construction management package, pre-construction meeting, noise ordinance compliance during temporary construction activities, and best management practices for temporary construction staging areas. These conditions will be shown on the next slide and are included in the revised conditions of approval. The pre-construction meeting will review the construction management package and BMPs. The meeting will include the building inspector and the adjoining property owners during construction activities, and the project is conditioned to comply with the CZLUO noise ordinance and maintain temporary staging areas. So shown here are the four conditions that were added to the revised conditions of approval. The applicant will be required to submit a construction management plan that will be reviewed and approved by the Department of Planning and Building and Public Works. Supporting documentation in this plan will include BMPs for grading excavations, earthwork, including temporary staging areas. The applicant will coordinate with Public Works to identify the construction and equipment staging locations through review and approval of an encroachment permit. In response to the comments on the design, the driveway is designed for drainage and low impact development, and the basement cannot be converted into a third dwelling unit. ADU parking is not required in this neighborhood, and the project provides a two-car garage to meet Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance parking standards. The design of the residence and ADU complies with the Estero Area Plan and the CZLUO, and the ADU has a separate entrance from the side of the building that is not visible from the street. So based on staff analysis, along with the project findings and revised conditions of approval, staff recommends the commission determine that this project is exempt from environmental review under CEQA based on the general rule or common sense exemption and approve variance N-DRC 2025-00010 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in revised Exhibit B. That concludes staff's presentation, and the planning staff and the project designer, Rachel, is available to respond to any questions the commission may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions at this point?
I just wondered if you could tell me a little more about the basement, just because that's kind of rare. Was it because of, I don't know, structural or its storage or what?
Yeah, so the basement design itself, it's not internally connected to the floor levels above, the habitable floor levels above, and the ADU has to be limited in size to not exceed certain size limits for the primary residence. So because it's just a separate area, it's not internally connected via like a stairway, it can only be used as like kind of an accessory, like storage area. You know, you can't habitate it. You can't live in it as like a bonus room or something like that. So they could use it for like a yoga workout space or something like that, but it can't be like, can't have a kitchen or anything like that, separately tenanted.
Okay, yep. Thank you.
Other questions at this point?
Was there someone here from their design team or? Oh, I'll hold my questions.
Okay, so maybe we can hear a little more on that. And so I'll wait then to ask, to check on anything. Anything else at this point? No? Okay. Well, with that, if there is an applicant representative who'd like to share some information, I invite you up.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Rachel Al-Jalani, the project representative for the proposed variance at 2720 Richard Avenue. Thank you, Mr. Knight and planning staff, for your presentation. This project has a brief 27-year history with the Randazzo family. They acquired two hillside parcels in 1999 and voluntarily merged them for their proposed development in 2008. The project received its first variance for grading on slopes greater than 30% from the Planning Commission, and the associated coastal development permit was issued in 2008. Unfortunately, this coincided with the Great Recession, and the family was unable to move the project forward at that time. Now, roughly two decades later, we're enthusiastic about the re-envisioned project. Mr. Randazzo is unable to be here due to prior spring break travel plans with his family, and Mrs. Ramos was unable to miss work today. The two of them, brother and sister, are Buena Fortuna LLC. Although they are not here with us this morning, they are not absentee property owners. Born, raised, and currently living on the Central Coast, they are known for their academic, business, and community involvement. They are looking forward to building their family's dream, and Mr. Randazzo cannot wait to have a son grow up in Cayucas. Cayucas is a small, tightly knit community. The first day I met the owners on site, we were approached by neighbors from five adjacent parcels, north, south, east, west, and northwesterly. Several neighbors shared stories. They remembered watching the Randazzos in their folding chairs at the top of the downward sloping lot, envisioning their new home and watching the sunset. In talking with the neighbors, we were able to understand how parking and stormwater had affected them, and we were able to address those design considerations in conjunction with the owner's goals of aging in place, natural lighting, energy efficiency, energy independence, and intergenerational housing. We had unanimous support from both the Cayucas Citizen Advisory Council's Land Use Committee and the entire Cayucas Citizens Advisory Council. The main concern was parking. In an effort to provide as much parking as possible, we actually pushed the structure downslope to abut the CSD easement to create parking for 6 to 10 vehicles, depending on the size of the vehicle. We sacrificed some of the backyard for this reason. For safety and accessibility, we also tried to keep the slope of the driveway to less than 10%, since neighbors expressed that steep driveways actually were very difficult to back out of because of the sight lines. We're grateful for the communication with the neighbors. The owner's contractor and design team have reviewed the comments received prior to today's hearing. We have a local Cayucan contractor on board who's experienced with the unique constraints. They understand what I call the five C's of construction: common sense, communication, cooperation, courtesy, and competence. The anticipated build time is 12 to 18 months, accounting for one rainy season. We have discussed scheduling certain activities around Thursday's trash day and parking constraints. The plans include staging areas and communication with adjacent property owners for earthwork. The contractor has recently completed projects on Fresno, Davies, Shearer, Mannix, and Studio Drive, to name a few, on both upward and downward sloping sites. Through the design process, we've been communicating with the neighbors to both the north, 2716 Richard Avenue, and south, 2730 Richard Avenue. Mr. Randazzo has been an acquaintance of Ms. Gonzalez, and the day we flew a drone to better understand the views, he let her know what was going on, and she informed him she was away that day and offered us the use of her off-site, off-street parking space. We've been in communication with the Pruitt family to the south to understand their floor plan in relation to ours, to prevent windows from looking directly onto each other. We have demonstrated our sensitivity to the existing neighborhood fabric, and that will continue during construction. I've been walking or biking to the site to avoid additional congestion and plan to continue to do so or carpool. Parking has been a concern that we have prioritized. This stretch of Richard Avenue is not a county-maintained road and is subject to different standards than other portions of Richard Avenue that are county-maintained. As you drive up to the site from the south, you will see a sign posted that reads, "Not a end of county-maintained road." This has allowed properties to develop their entire frontage to accommodate parking in the right-of-way, as is the case in the majority of the developed parcels. With the exception of vacant lots, there are very few parallel parking spaces along the street that do not have a mailbox or fire hydrant. The de facto parking is perpendicular to the street, and these spaces exist in the public right-of-way, although constructed and maintained by the property owners. This has actually maximized the parking potential of the street. It reminds me of when I first moved to Cayugas 21 years ago, and North and South 3rd Street both allowed two-way traffic with parallel parking. As the need for parking increased, these streets became one-way and parking spaces were drawn perpendicular to the park. It's unclear when the county may begin to maintain this section of Richard Avenue and how the right-of-way will evolve. But for now, the priority and common goal is to create a street frontage that maximizes parking. In my neighborhood, we communicate with our neighbors and share the right-of-way. Some more than others. I've always seen this happen. I have also seen this now happen on Richard Avenue, and our design has addressed this concern to the extent possible. Stormwater management through low-impact development is challenging on a site that has more impervious surface allocated to parking than to the rooftop. We've integrated rainwater collection, biofiltration, and methods to slow, spread, and sink the flows on-site to appropriately manage the stormwater from on-site impervious surfaces and those coming from off-site. Our design strategy will be finalized in conjunction with the county staff during the permitting process. We understand that no one enjoys living next to construction and the temporary impacts. We are confident these can be addressed through the revised conditions of approval presented by staff. We ask that you approve the variance per staff recommendations, and I will be available for any questions from the commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ashalani. I hope I'm not butchering that too poorly.
You're good.
I think there may be some questions for you. Here, got some questions? Any questions? Okay, well, I have a few. So in the letters we've heard from neighbors, we've heard issues raised, as staff pointed out, noise, vibration, the parking issues that you've referred to. I trust that the noise ordinance standards will be followed, you know, as written, so I don't want to get into those. And I trust that the vibration issues will be handled by your geotechs. I know that's a tricky one and challenging when you're right up against lot lines and that there are already developed houses on three sides. But will you speak a little to the temporary staging and materials storage that has been brought up as concerns by neighbors? Because I understand that challenge of having a lot of materials to store and large trucks. And I see in the conditions that there are conditions to kind of spell that out. But could you just give us, and if some neighbors are here, some idea of how that may look, a plan for that so the road isn't blocked?
Yes. Andy, is it possible to bring up the site plan? So obviously earthwork will be the first thing to happen on site, which will allow us to create some flat surfaces for working during that stage of construction. We also have the right-of-way area shown to the right. That ranges from 20, that is off street, and ranges from 21 feet deep to 24 feet deep. As construction progresses, we'll be able to put base down, and there will be parking for at least 4 vehicles in that space off the street. As the rest of the driveway is built out, we will have additional material storage and parking on site.
Okay, and so right now that's kind of the blue area that's outside of the driveway area up to the property line on the right?
I'm sorry, yes, the blue area is the street at this time.
Okay.
And so the overlap between the blue and the yellow, just outside property line. Do we have a pointer?
Okay, I guess it's small enough. I'm not seeing the property line, sorry.
Yeah, the furthest right blue line is the center line of street. Okay. Is that correct, Rachel?
That is the other edge of pavement.
Oh, other edge of pavement. Yeah.
Okay.
So at the top of the slide, it says county right-of-way, and the left portion of it with the yellow overlay, is all off-street.
Okay.
And would be able to be used for staging and vehicles.
Okay, so the plan that you would envision would basically be to keep the vehicles and the material storage within that area that's currently the kind of darker yellow.
Correct.
Area, which is off the street.
Correct.
Okay, that's helpful to get a sense of how that may look. So if there are some more neighbor concerns, they would have a sense that that's what the proposal would be.
Yes, and right now that is the steep drop-off. So grading must commence to build up that portion of the site to accommodate the vehicles and the material storage.
Okay, so there would still need to be a plan. Or any guess how long the grading would take? It's not something I know.
We anticipate grading vehicles will be on the site further down in the construction zone.
Okay, so those wouldn't be a problem necessarily in themselves.
No.
That they would get dropped or drive down this deep area.
Correct.
Okay, yeah, because I certainly do understand the concerns on this deep, narrow road of throughway and access for others around there. Okay, so we may hear some more on that. And then as far as the basement goes, I heard a question earlier about it. And my sense is because the lot is steep, if you just do the triangle math, you end up with some kind of triangular area at your cutout that creates a basement. We certainly see it in Cambria with steep lots, that there's some substantial underhome basement area. Do you want to speak to that a little, since that's been a concern expressed?
Yes, correct. It is a planned to be a workshop space for the owner. And one of the things that we often see is people converting their garages to accessory uses. And because parking is of such importance on the street and the site, we wanted to be able to have spaces that were accessory to the residential use, but not taking place in the garages and displacing the parking.
And do you want to speak to the concern that that would eventually get lived in? You know, it does happen. It's been known to happen.
Yes, and I think this is where we get back to Cayucos being a tightly knit community, and we have the adjacent neighbors, I believe, in the room today. I think the owners have no intention of creating a livable space down there. It is for their use, not for an additional dwelling. And should there be future owners, I think the local community will be policing any such use.
Knowing the property could change hands, and it does frequently happen. So what these current owner builders intend could be very different than what buyers intend. Would there be any physical constraints that would prevent that from becoming living space down the line?
No kitchen, and you don't have, right now it's not habitable space.
Yeah. Right. Okay, I'll leave that there for now. Any other questions at this point? Okay, thank you very much. With that, I will open up public comment. Is there anyone here from the public who would like to speak to this item? Have you turned in a speaker card? No, okay, come on up and then you can turn it in later. Good morning. If you will, please state your name.
Sure.
And then you have 3 minutes. And then if you will, staff has some comment cards over here
Thank you.
Could fill out, so we have your full name on record.
Perfect. Good morning. And thank you, staff, for working on the reflected memo and revised conditions. We appreciate it. My husband, Dave, and I are adjacent property owners, and we are exactly right next to where the project's going to be. And we've been at 2730 Richard Avenue for 30 years. And we want to start with saying that we fully support the property owner's right to build. And we want the Randanzo family to be our neighbors, and we're happy with that. What we're concerned about is the grading on a slope over 30%. And what you can't tell when you see these designs, you can't see what it actually looks like to be on the street. And when you're on the street, I mean, you're looking straight down. And our houses are right on the lot line. And we're really concerned about where all these parking spaces, where is this gonna happen? How is this actually gonna occur? As we noted in our written comments, Richard Avenue has no legal staging area. And that area just literally drops off. There's no shoulders, there's no room for emergency vehicles to pass when construction equipment is in the roadway. These aren't hypothetical. This is something that occurred repeatedly on our street, and it's for years. And because the county is treating all the permits as ministerial, that was surprising to us. It's not going through any, this is, today's variance hearing is the only discretionary opportunity to ensure that grading will not be detrimental to the public, our health, our safety, our welfare, or, and that's required by Government Code 65906. And we appreciate the staff's commitment that the construction management package must be approved before any grading or construction permits are put into place. And we appreciate the additional things that the property owner is trying to do. But to really make this meaningful and enforceable, we respectfully request two essential additions. Number one, We're asking that the variance does not become effective until the CMP is approved and recorded as a covenant running with the land. And number two, we're requesting that a performance bond or cash security be required to guarantee implementation of the CMP and repair any damage. These two conditions are what make the CMP enforceable. Without recordation and a bond, the county is left relying on after-the-fact enforcement on a street where blocked access has already created documented safety issues. This is a thing that happens all the time on our street with construction. We also support staff's work on the remaining CMP elements, the emergency access, off-site staging, vibration monitoring, and an independent compliance monitor, all of which directly access the safety concerns on this narrow hillside street. In short, what we're asking is that the commission approve the variance only if the CMP is approved, recorded, and backed by a performance bond. And if that's not possible, to continue this item so the staff can incorporate these protections. This ensures that they can have responsible development while protecting public safety and access for all of us on Richard Avenue.
Thank you very much. If you will, just if there's one more sentence.
Yeah, I just wanted, that was it. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for me?
Thank you. Not at this point. I think we'll bring it. We'll see if there are any other comments.
Appreciate it.
And have staff respond to some of the items you've brought up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else here for public comment to speak to this item? Anybody else? Come on up.
Hello. My name is David Kateri. I'm a homeowner two doors down. I'm not going to take a lot of time here. What I mostly want to say is there are elderly people who live alone in these houses, and emergency vehicles come by every other month. And so I am really concerned about the public safety and access to this. The road is small enough as it is. Any sort of disruption there, somebody has people staying over and people move into the road a little too much, emergency vehicles have difficulty getting by. So it's a public safety thing that I really want to emphasize. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kateri. If you haven't filled out a public speaker card, do that over there. And there are some in the back, too. You've got options. Anyone else like to speak to this item? Anyone else? Come on up. Okay, with that, I'll close public comment and bring it back to staff. Staff, do you have some responses to the couple of requests made here that the variance not be effective until a CMP is approved and then the potential for bonding involved with that, kind of understanding the after-the-fact challenges here and what holds people to those requirements?
I might defer to Ben on that one. I haven't
Council gets
seen that
it.
Done, but there is, like, the vesting of the variance occurs once grading has occurred beyond, or construction has occurred beyond grading.
As far so as sticks that, in the ground kind of vesting.
So if that helps with assurance that things will be implemented and in place, the permit itself needs to be vested to become effective.
Let's see where he goes with that.
So yeah, Ben Dorth County Council. So this would be a new proposal. It's not something that the county has done before in terms of recording or requiring a bond for this. So it would be out of the norm for kind of our normal practice. You know, as Nicole stated, I think our normal practice provides assurances that the plan is followed and implemented correctly. So.
Right. Well, I'm just kind of playing back here about potential and potential for problems. One can see where there could be this plan, but it's not adhered to and becomes problematic for the neighborhood. And what other options do we have to make sure that's adhered to? You can have a nice plan. We have all kinds of nice plans we don't follow. What's the recourse for the neighborhood here that's concerned about safety issues?
So in the condition language, we did incorporate, it does say that the neighbors will be involved in the pre-construction meeting, so they will be able to have their concerns addressed as part of that condition. And another thing that we can implement is perhaps including the public comments that we received as part of this variance request in the CMP, so that way the contractors and everyone is aware of what the concerns were from the public?
Yeah, so I guess the most extreme would be a revocation hearing, right? Like if someone isn't abiding by the terms of their permit and also their building permits, encroachment permit with, you know, public works, et cetera, they halt work and we could take enforcement action. We would start with trying to get condition compliance at, you know, at first, and if they just are not, then a revocation hearing would be extreme, but that would be our typical,
what would be
worst case scenario,
the process for that, because I think neighbors are just thinking, okay, this is happening on a Wednesday, everything's blocked and ambulance can't get through. What happens Thursday?
Yeah, so a revocation hearing is based on reportable violations of the terms of their permit over and over and over. And maybe we can have
that. Yeah, I can jump in here too. Ben Norworth County Council. So even before we get to the revocation hearing, we can issue like a stop work order to stop any work on the site and resolve those issues more immediately. The revocation process is obviously going to be a more lengthy process where we have to come back to the commission and present evidence that, you know, they are not satisfying their permit conditions. So that is a more long-term process. But we do have some short-term things that we can do quickly to resolve violations. It does kind of require cooperation, more cooperation with the landowner. But we do have those tools in our tool belt that we can take advantage of.
I just also just wanted to double check that the CMP does cover the concerns about emergency vehicles. Okay. And yeah, because one of the requests, the variance to run with the land, I don't know, that raised my lawyerly spidey senses. I'm not sure if you can you legally do that?
Well, once the variance is vested, so once they've done site work on the property, it would run with the land. But we would have to go through the revocation process, like I said, that would be based on violation of the conditions of that variance.
Well, let's just stay on this one for a minute. So understanding the concerns and kind of the question about what we can hold people to, the challenges with this site surrounded by so many already constructed homes. I guess there are the multiple parts. There's kind of setting up the meeting and framing that so that the concerns are out there. And there's addressing those concerns and coming up with an adequate plan. And then the third part is actually following that plan, making sure the parties involved follow it. So I feel like the conditions that we have kind of lay out the process for laying out the concerns and creating the plan. I'm just still a little bit skeptical, wondering if we have enough realistic kind of framework to enforce those or make sure they happen.
What would be a reasonable amount of time? Because I seen some pictures that somebody sent in of the street. It's pretty narrow, and have some experience doing stuff like that on narrow streets. I mean, the streets are going to be blocked for certain amounts of time, it looks like, in that, no matter what. There's going to be equipment dropped off. Like the first day of construction, someone's going to have to back in there and drop off a tractor or two or three. So there's going to be a blockage there. That truck's going to have to back down the street. So what's in a reasonable amount of time for the street to be blocked? I mean, because we don't want it to be, you know, a truck pulls up, sets its brakes, and there's a call to the police department. I mean, there's going to have to be some amount of time until they can get a staging area constructed on the site, which I imagine the builder is going to, the first thing he's going to want to do is build out that wall for that garage slab so they can move into that area. Then you're going to have truss deliveries, lumber deliveries, all that stuff's large vehicles that are going to consume the street. So we probably should, we can't say there's going to be no parking on the street. You know, there's going to be blockages, but with that said, you also you can't block the street for 4 hours because there is, you know, even if without old people living there, you got to let emergency vehicles in and out. So we probably should start with like, what is a reasonable amount of time? Because instead of trying to fix something that we know is going to happen, while we look at what's going to happen and how do we mitigate that a little bit, you know, in a reasonable effort to, I mean, we could have them come back up, but I don't know if, is there room for two vehicles to pass on there when large vehicles are in there? It looked like on the pictures I've seen, there's not.
Yes, at this time, I think Mr. Pruitt in his letter attached some pictures that show, I think it is a concrete truck coming through. If you have a vehicle on each side of the street, which has been the case on occasion when I've been on site, a third vehicle, a large truck, can pass through very tightly. So if you have one vehicle parked on the side of the street, yes, you can have another construction vehicle coming through. So I think it is managing, not stacking up vehicles across the street. And I do think what has been brought up is reference to past construction in the neighborhood, and there will be continued construction in the neighborhood that is not associated with our project. And I think we need to be careful of an undue burden on the property owners when at times I've seen 3, 4, or 5 other construction projects occurring on the street at the same time. But yes, we would need to be careful not to stack vehicles. And when we've been on site, we've actually assisted one of the elderly neighbors across the street in helping her navigate backing up and continuing down the street. So communication and working together to make sure you don't have more, you're not parking on each side of the street and then expecting another vehicle to come through. At most, one vehicle can be on the side of the street allowing traffic to pass through. If that one vehicle is the construction delivery, the pumper, the concrete, whoever needs to go to the site, then the contractor needs to make sure there are not other vehicles stacked. And that could be difficult because you could have neighboring vehicles in front of the site at times.
Thank you for that. Understand the challenges here. So I'll start this off into deliberation. It's not a question then. That I think so much of this relies on communication. And thanks to your point, there are going to be times where there are just large vehicles that need to turn and back in there and are going to block the road. So I think there's some reasonable expectation there, and a lot relies on communication. So is staff confident that your pre-management and construction management plan kind of incorporates components for that necessary communication? Absolutely, with neighbor parking, we go through mm-hmm. this all the time too on a busy mixed-use commercial street. Mm-hmm. Things are going on. We need to move neighbors' cars and when we're moving equipment around. So that would be in there, mm-hmm. a plan for communicating.
Yeah, and so, you know, it is a unique neighborhood, right? It's a small beach community. It's one of the last remaining vacant lots, and it's in a steep area, right? We're starting to see more of this coming before our commission, kind of these old remnant lots that are coming through. So it is unique, right? It's a small beach community. It's hilly. So we do feel comfortable with the 4 proposed conditions being able to be met. We have our safeguards with our Public Works Department, our building division, and our stormwater division. When we met yesterday to talk with the divisions about the public comments that we received, you know, we talked about a nearby site that was, you know, being developed and some of the learning lessons, right? There were some learning lessons through that project. They were talking about bedrock and it's shallow, and so downhill owners, they need to be a little bit more beefed up as far as their on-site, like erosion control measures and stuff like that. So our stormwater division is aware of that and is putting those conditions on their grading permits and their construction permits to really beef it up for this project. So we're aware. These are, you know, enforceable. Our departments can make sure that they're implemented. And I think what Andy was, he mentioned this a bit, but what we can do is we can prepare like a combined collated public comment package and give that to our building, public works, stormwater folks, so that when it comes time to actually implement a construction management plan, have that pre-construction meeting, they have the benefit of all these comments and what those root issues are, right? Because we saw in those emergency vehicles, where are they going to stage temporary, you know, loading and offloading, et cetera. So that way they can see what can be incorporated into those plans.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for that. And one other question on vibration then, and that's come up. And I did see a monitor, let's see, supposed to be posted. Was that a stormwater monitor or vibrations? That was a stormwater monitor. Okay, and what about the issue of vibration? And just, I presume the geotech is on top of that, and the geotech that'll be hired is as conservative as ours?
That's correct. Yeah, the project underwent geologic peer review, and those conditions in the report are included through reference in this variance.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Okay. So their calculations and findings will be used there to make sure we don't have a problem. Okay. Are there other questions or thoughts from commissioners? Okay. Well, since there aren't any right of way here, I want to say I really appreciate the fact that there are challenges with this infill site. This is being developed very much like the sites around it, so I'm very comfortable with it. I want to see infill developments in these communities that already have infrastructure and roads. Here we see exactly the challenges where infrastructure and roads aren't perfect, and one more parcel developed on them has its impacts, especially when everybody else is already there. It's our challenge with infill, just as it's kind of what we kind of want to do in a smart growth sort of scenario, but it's also extra challenging. So I want to apologize to the neighbors who certainly will be impacted by this. And I think we've got enough conditions in place that this will be, these issues can get handled. I'd encourage neighbors in advance to communicate, you know, clearly too, with the project team and the contractors that'll be on site, and kind of work with them and ask for good communication and share it as you go along. I think Commissioner Avenola pointed out it is just going to be realistic that sometimes the road will be blocked with any of this, and to understand that could take a little while and that it won't never happen. But you know that you can demand that the contractors kind of communicate when that'll be and try to make it as brief a period as possible. So if there are no other comments, somebody want to make a motion? I can make it. If the staff will show that amended motion with a revised
one
conditions.
Quick comment.
Yep.
This would be more because the development of the site, I don't think is an over concern, because everything else has been built in that area the same way. You know, this poor guy's just lost on his Tetris game because he's the last one to build there. So he has no convenience of any other blank spots. But with that said, the concern of the neighbors is pretty vital. If you're on the upstream side of that, truck comes in there and parks. But maybe the best solution to that, because the concern is I think what they're saying is, how do you immediately fix any of this? And I think this we were talking about, there is no way, because you got to wait for there to be a problem. You got to call it in. You got to wait. But maybe the developer and the homeowners, I mean, I've done this before in passes. The general contractor should probably give a cell phone number to people located. With that saying, you got to heed, there's a little responsibility to the caller, meaning, you know, if the truck's parked there for 10 minutes, you can't call and say the truck has been there for 4 hours. So, but if they're blocked in the roadway and it's unreasonable amount of time, I think that's fair. And that's just advice. That's nothing to do with official. It just might help, you know. It sounds like the owner is pretty amenable with stuff and also agreeable with working with the neighbors. So that might be a solution to resolving anything that's an immediate blockage of the road, which is kind of the main concern and the biggest problem that's going to happen there.
Yep, agreed. And I believe then that would be part of the construction management plan, those sort of points of contact between neighbors and the construction team, and someone responsible for responding to those concerns and kind of ferreting out reasonable and unreasonable. So with that, I would move that we determine the project is exempt from environmental review under CEQA based on the general rule common sense exemption, and that we approve variance NDRC 2025-00010 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the revised conditions listed in Exhibit B, attached as the staff memo posted on the agenda and have been shown by staff.
I'll second.
Okay, and if the clerk will please call the roll.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
And Commissioner Shaw?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. And with that, we will move on to our next agenda item, number 5. Thank you, staff. We'll just take a minute for people to clear out. They want to take off. New staff to come in. Hopefully they did. Did they fill out speaker slips? Yeah. Thanks for coming in this morning. Okay, if the clerk will please call item number 5.
Yes, our final hearing is a hearing to consider a request by Santa Margarita Ranch LLC for a vesting tentative tract map to subdivide an existing 8.01 acre parcel into 6 parcels of sizes ranging from approximately 1 to 1.7 acres, each for the purpose of sale and or development. This is county file number N-SUB-2024-00085, and this is in Supervisorial District 5.
Thank you for that. And any ex parte disclosures commissioners would like to make? Nope. Okay, seeing none. And if Mr. Hughes will please introduce the project team.
Yes, Eric Hughes, Planning and Building. Presenting this item today, we have Senior Planner Jeremy Freund, and in support, we have Supervising Planner Cheryl Koo and myself, Eric Hughes. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Good morning, Plan Commissioners. My name is Jeremy Freund, Project Manager with the County, and this morning I'll be presenting the overview of the proposed project. The applicant requests to subdivide an existing 8.01 acre parcel into 6 parcels. Parcels vary in sizes from 1.01 acres to 1.65 acres net. Project includes the construction of a new 24-foot wide private road with a private access easement with utilities, including proposed water main laterals on each lot, a sewer main along private access road, as well as sewer laterals to each lot for future sewer connections, construction of a drainage basin and frontage improvements. Approximately 1.43 acres of site disturbance would occur from these improvements. The project is located within Santa Margarita off of I Street at 22937 I Street. Located here, it's also adjacent to Wilhelm Avenue. Property is located within the residential suburban land use category. It's located within the San Salinas River subarea of the North County Area Plan. Located, as I mentioned before, within Santa Margarita, but it's also within the Santa Margarita Urban Reserve Line. It's surrounded by other residential suburban land uses and residential structures to the north, east, and west, and agricultural land uses to the south, which include vineyards and single-family residences. This is the aerial of the site. The site consists of an existing single-family residence and agricultural accessory structures and existing oak trees. Project has been historically farmed. Here before you is the vesting tentative tract map, proposing the 6 lots and the proposed 24-foot wide private road and access way, which includes the utilities, as stated before, as well as the drainage basin, and the existing home and barn would remain through the subdivision. all parcels meet the minimum parcel sizes of minimum of 1 acre based on access and water and sewer capabilities. In front of you is the proposed preliminary gradient drainage plan. Outlined in red is the area that's being disturbed, which is the primary access road, drainage basin, as well as the extension of the driveway to the existing residence on lot 4. The project does include a preliminary utility plan. Preliminary utility plan does identify water, sewer, power, TV cable going down the proposed access roadway, as well as drainage courses, improvements to the drainage basin. The project does include the, as I mentioned, dry utility lines for sewer, but all lots are designed to be served by individual septic systems. The dry sewer lines are for any future connections to a community sewer plant if it's ever built. Project is consistent with the county plans and ordinances and policies. It meets all required findings, and there's proposed no variances requested at this time. Project as conditioned meets Title 22's land use ordinance for setbacks, minimum parcel sizes, site access, water, and septic service compliance. Project complies with the planning area standards, the Santa Margarita Community Plan standards, and Title 21 property ordinance standards as conditioned, and with the two proposed requests for adjustments and waivers, which I'll identify later. Project has undergone sufficient environmental review pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act, which was a mitigating neg deck come from after the review was completed. As I mentioned, there are some discussion points of the project. The project does include two adjustments and or waivers. A request to waive curb gutter and sidewalk has been requested along the private access road. That request has been reviewed by Public Works and county staff. Do have provided findings of support for this waiver request due to the rural nature and of the community that curb gutter sidewalks would not be required. The second request is to waive the limitation for an access easement serving more than 5 parcels. The project would be, as proposed, serving 6 lots. Public Works has reviewed this waiver request and supports the request. The adjustment allows for pedestrian and vehicular access across large rural lots over 1 acre. It will not result in detrimental impacts to traffic, circulation systems, emergency access, public utility or storm drainage systems, or other vehicular pedestrian safety issues. The private access would also be maintained by the individual lot owners through road maintenance agreement. This type of waiver has been approved by the county in the past, and as most recently with tracks regarding the River Edge project in San Miguel, tracks in Napomo, which is the Juniper track, and several others. Secondary access is not required, and in all cases will be, as I mentioned, privately maintained for roadways. Additionally, there is an existing agricultural accessory barn located on site. Under Section 223060B, ag accessory structures on properties smaller than 10 acres can only be established after a principal use has been established on the site. While the existing property complies with this requirement by sharing a parcel with a single-family residence, of the total of 8 acres, the proposed subdivision would render the structure non-compliant on Lot 5. The applicant has requested a voluntary placement of putting a bond on the property for 5 years to retain the agricultural accessory structure until a single-family residence is constructed. The project has been conditioned to do so. Finally, there is, because this is a subdivision and there isn't proposed individual construction of the homes at this as part of this project, that the if and when the lots are developed, the oak trees that exist on site will be evaluated, and the MND have identified mitigation measures and conditioned to do so to evaluate any potential impacts or removals of the trees. at either a 4-to-1 or 2-to-1 ratio accordingly. During the review, the conditions of approval, staff identified and provided to commissioners revised conditions of approval, exhibit B, attachment 2. The revisions included corrections to condition 5M and 34E, referencing streetlight plans and maintenance, and are proposed to be removed, as streetlights are neither proposed nor required as part of the project. And condition 39 is proposed to be revised to correctly refer to as standard conditions for subdivisions using community water, not individual wells. During the review of the MND, it was circulated and we received comments from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, which requested additional items environmentally be reviewed for biological resources. Staff reviewed their comments and have agreed to include the following biological mitigation measures and revised conditions of approval to address their concerns. These revised conditions and the previous MND and the biological assessment that was done by the applicant and reviewed by staff still meet the CEQA guidelines and requirements and does not exceed or require a further environmental impact and doesn't propose additional impact requests to the project. The extensive changes on the screen, I'm visually going to show it there because it was identified in the staff memo. These are further conditions that basically refine pre-construction surveys for birds, reptiles and amphibians, and the western spadefoot toad. This additional modification is if it got changed to from a threatened species, to a threatened species, that they would have to go through a take permit, as well as revised conditions for pre-construction surveys for bats and burrowing owls. Project was, as I mentioned, referred to other public agencies locally and through the state. The project was reviewed by the Santa Margarita Area Advisory Council twice. Upon the final review, reviewed and approved the project to move forward. With the proposed mitigation measure changes and conditions of approval changes, staff is recommending that planning commissioners adopt the mitigating negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, and then approve the tentative tract map 3237 N/2024-00085 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the revised conditions listed in Exhibit B. Thank you. I'm available for questions and answers, and we also have the applicant agent representative team to present and answer questions as well.
Thank you, Mr. Freund. Are there some questions for staff at this point?
I have one on a few slides back. There's some mitigation measures for, I think it was some toads and some other stuff that may be implemented, or may, it's not even a law yet, but we're trying to put mitigation in place for it ahead of time. I don't know if I understood that.
Eric Hughes, Planning and Building. Yeah, so the Western Spadefoot Toad, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is considering it to be a listed threatened or endangered species. It is not at this time. And so if it does become a threatened or endangered species, it's required, and if there were impacts, if it was determined that there were impacts of the species, it would require an incidental take permit. However, an incidental take permit is not required when it's not listed. So at this time, it's not a requirement, but should it become listed between now and the time the project is implemented, And of course, if there were potential impacts, then they would need to obtain this take coverage. We saw a similar issue with another species, and so this is one of the, you know, requests that Fish and Wildlife has asked of us, and so we were adding it in there as a, you know, if this should happen between now and construction, then this is, you know, the applicant would need to obtain coverage. Hope that makes more sense.
Your answer does.
Okay.
He's going to leave it at that. Other questions at this point?
No, not at this time. I'll wait to hear about the project.
Okay, I have just a couple of questions at this point. And first of all, one of the exceptions we're being asked to make here is for more than five parcels on a private drive. This will be six parcels. So I just wanted to understand better kind of that question of why we set the number at five. What are public purposes in that? Is that for staff want to take that or JR take that one?
Eric, I don't know, JR, if you want to take it, or I can just speak in general terms. I know, like, for example, County Fire, when they're looking at number of parcels, I think the driveway versus a roadway, there's a requirement typically for like secondary access. And so you can have four parcels on one driveway, but once you get into additional parcels, it requires a secondary access. However, that particular issue, so that's one of the things that's considered when we kind of hit that trigger.
Okay, so it's some degree of safety thing for fire at a certain point.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, because the width of the road, there's, you know, differences in how wide a road would need to be versus a driveway. But again, this project meets, you know, has been reviewed and meets those requirements. And I don't know if there's additional, you know, requirements from Public Works on that, but.
Yes, GR Beard, Public Works. So another thing too, I mean, this kind of goes back to even before 92 when this ordinance was written. So that historical knowledge and the exact reason behind it is kind of unknown, more or less. So, I mean, what we're looking at is, as Eric had stated, with regards to the fire regulations, because there's been, you know, fire regulations updates since then, and other things, you know, housing needs and things of that sort. But another thing too would be related to road maintenance. So, whenever we condition projects, we are now requiring that a developer, if it's not going to be a county maintained roadway, in this case, it wouldn't be because it'd be a private easement. That the developer would develop a homeowners association to maintain that roadway, or develop like a road maintenance agreement that would be shared amongst the property owners to ensure maintenance of that roadway, so that there isn't an undue burden on an individual property owner. So that would be another reason behind that. And I know there was a comment about, you know, is this setting precedence? It certainly would not be, because we've been doing this for years now. For instance, your commission recently approved a River's Edge. I counted about 25 to 27 homes. If this wasn't a Title 21 adjustment that could be approved by your body, you know, that would have disallowed 27 homes at River's Edge, for instance. Or People's Self-Help development in the Pomo that was recently completed. It was for a 10-lot subdivision. That would have prohibited like five. So they would have been only to have been able to build five homes instead of 10. So there certainly is a benefit to allowing this, and it's evaluated by both Public Works and planning staff to ensure that road maintenance needs are met, as well as like fire needs are met. So certainly there are exceptions that we do grant for specific situations, and it would make sense for the subdivision as well.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful to understand the reason for the rule when we're looking to make exception to it. And so I'm hearing then that the fire codes are met, that the road's wide enough for the trucks to get into and turn around in this design, and that I see in the conditions that we have a requirement for an association or some kind of management then and maintenance of that road. So those challenges are kind of met within this. Thank you. And then as far as the curb. I had another question, not on the curb. Advisory Council discussion items were listed in the staff package, and just wanted to go through those because several items came up. So just want to confirm that they have been addressed. And one of them was some concern regarding this dry sewer lines proposed as part of this project when there's not yet any public sewer system. Who wants to discuss that one?
I can. So the dry sewer line is applicant proposed, and including their laterals. It's not a requirement because right now they're proposing, they're meeting the requirement for septic, for on-site septic. However, they are proposing to put it in the proposed dry access easement roadway if and when the community, if there ever is one constructed, the dry lines are there and they can adequately hook up to it and be less site disturbance, et cetera, on those future homeowners for that reason.
Okay, so that's a readiness issue then that wouldn't affect anything right now. Does Santa Margarita have wastewater processing plant or is everyone on septics? I'm just out of curiosity. Do we know? All septic now? There is no plant there yet? But you know, somebody knows, Mr. Rossi knows.
It's all septic.
Come on up. We'll be somewhat legit here. Yeah.
I probably can explain
by the book. It'd be handy to know just because this did come up at advisory and has been an issue.
Rob Rossi, part of Santa Margarita Ranch. A long time ago, it was recognized that sewer was needed in Margarita, and a condition was put on the ranch to someday donate a site for a plant, which we started to donate 10 years ago. And we thought we would do it conjunctively with funding that was available. And I think it was in the Obama administration where there was funding to correct the sewer deficiency. And about half of the town is in the lowland, and half this part isn't. And the half that's in the lowland probably fails annually in heavy rains. But we didn't have heavy rains until 3 years ago. And then when we had the heavy rains, it exaggerated the problem. So the community got together, CSA 23, and we've been in discussions ever since about building a sewer plant, both an initial one and then a bigger one. And one, the initial one may come into the county in a few months to serve some of the commercial area. But given that, when we talked to Public Works, we discussed that every time we build something, why not put the sewer in contemplation that someday there might be a system. That's why it's there. It doesn't serve anything except, you know, it's, and we had to try to decide, should it go toward the South Ranch or toward the town? And Rob Miller with Wallace helped us, and that's where it ended up.
Right, because you don't have a site. There's no identified site yet.
We've looked at five
plants. You're not sure where these lines will be running down.
We've looked at five sites, yeah. Gravity, pumping, and yes.
An interesting one. Okay, thank you. That's helpful just to understand that challenge and opportunity there. With those lines getting put in, it's much easier to do now. Project does not show proposed access to adjacent church lot was a comment that came up and a concern among some advisory council members. Want to just explain access to an adjacent church lot?
Yes, Jeremy Fine. Currently that parcel, the church lot, will take access off I Street directly. So no access is proposed coming from this subdivision. And therefore, right now, the road is simply a private access to serve the existing or proposed six lots. So they're not tied together, the church property and this property.
Okay, so for people who may have been concerned in the community about access to this church lot, that is available elsewhere and not a neglected component of this project.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you very much. And then there was a question about an 8-inch water line and whether it's oversized. What do we know about that?
J.R. Beard, Public Works. I'll take that one, Jeremy. So that was a condition of CSA 23 in their intent to serve letter. So because this will be servicing six lots, public improvement standards require that the main size be an 8-inch water line. Also, if you had the opportunity to review the plans, there is a fire hydrant at the end of the line too, which has typically it's 6-inch line. So The sizing is to meet public improvement standards. It's going to be servicing 6 lots, and there's a fire hydrant too. So domestic water and fire water is the reasoning behind the size of that water line.
Okay, so if I heard you right, to confirm, that means really the minimum to meet this project need is 8 inches. I suspect there may have been concern this was oversized to meet some other potential project hookup or some such.
Correct, yeah, this is for this subdivision.
Okay, thank you very much, appreciate that. And then I had a last question just about trees and whether staff wants to take this or if the applicant's making a presentation. Right now, we're just approving the subdivision. So we don't know what will happen when the houses are built, which would be a secondary ministerial process. But just wanted to look forward, because we're approving a subdivision, we can guess that some houses will be built. How many trees might be lost, or do we have any sense of how many oak trees are within these building envelopes? If staff doesn't know that, maybe the applicant's agent.
Cheryl Kuhl, planning. We did have a tree resource assessment for the entire site. There's 44 trees total on the site. I think only 2 are anticipated being impacted for the roadway. We do have mitigations that would apply to every lot. So if they do end up taking out trees or impacting them, those replacement and protection measures will be required. So every building permit's going to be reviewed for that. But no, we don't know how many, but those protections are there when the time comes.
Okay. I'd just be curious, maybe the applicant's agent knows, or there's some accounting for that, because the subdivision does imply that houses will be built and some trees will be impacted, so it's not unrealistic to understand that a little better before we create the subdivision that allows for the construction. Any other questions at this point? Okay. With that, does the applicant agent have a presentation for us? Sir?
Yes, good morning, Chairperson Wyatt and Commissioners. My name is Ian McCorville. I'm a land use consultant at Kirk Consulting. I am here on behalf of Santa Margarita Ranch, LLC. Thank you, Jeremy and Cheryl, for the very thorough presentation. I think we covered a lot of the main points, so I'm just going to touch on some of the items that maybe were briefed over. Here we have the site context map. As Jeremy noted, we are surrounded by residential suburban parcels to the north, west, and east. We have Santa Margarita Ranch to the south, which is agriculture. When we're looking at surrounding parcel sizes, what this subdivision proposes is consistent with surrounding lots. So we are fitting into the community context in that regard. Here we have the vesting tentative tract map, just a little extra color there. One thing I wanted to point out is that the difference between the net and the gross acres would be that access easement encumbering the lots. As you can see, it barely touches lot 6, and that's why we only have a 0.01 acre difference there. And then that basin on lot 6 is a shallow basin, so that won't be fenced. In terms of the minimum parcel size test for residential suburban, we did meet the 1 acre test from the land use category standpoint, and then from the LAMP, it was also a 1 acre minimum parcel size, so that is where that was derived from. We meet it across all parcels. And then in terms of environmental considerations, it was noted that we're going to be served by CSA 23 for water. We have an intent to serve letter from them, and then on-site wastewater treatment for the sites until a septic or sewer plant is established sometime in the future, and we can maybe use that dry sewer line. In terms of cultural resources, there were 2 isolated artifacts found on the site, but they were not determined to be significant under CEQA. And we do have a condition to do archaeological monitoring, at least during the initial ground disturbance phase. And then lastly, we did do that tree inventory report. It did cover the site. Right now, we're, at least for the subdivision improvements, there's going to be no impacts. For future building permits, we're not expecting any tree removals. But in the event there are mitigation measures on the project that would ensure we mitigate at a 2-to-1 or 4-to-1 ratio if we do remove it. The other thing I wanted to point out is there is an existing driveway on the site. The arborist report noted that, you know, if that driveway does get removed in the future, it actually improved the health of those oak trees by removing pavement in the drip line and root zone. So with that, I would just respectfully request that the commission adopt the staff's recommendation and approve the project. And I'm available for any questions. Thank you. Thank you.
Was I on? Can you hear me now? I'll open it up to public comment. And I'm looking for anyone hiding who wants to jump up and speak to this item. Seeing no one jumping up, we'll close public comment and bring it back to commissioners.
I think this is pretty typical for what we've seen, and nothing really struck me. I saw that the advisory committee was supportive, so I have no problem with this.
Okay, other comments?
No, do you
questions?
Have any?
Questions? Oh. I may have just a couple. Sure, sure.
Right.
I'm also comfortable with it. We're asking to make 3 adjustment waivers, the more than 5 parcels, so really appreciate staff pointing out why we have that 5 parcel maximum and why we're okay exceeding it here. We have a request to adjust the curb, sidewalk, and gutter requirement, much as I'd love to see sidewalks everywhere in this town without sidewalks. Requiring it for these 6 parcels probably does not make sense. We have an existing ad structure, so we're having to make some adjustments to allow for that, which includes some bonding and some various rigmarole. So sounds like staff did some creative work with the applicant to kind of figure out how to make that stay and work. So I'm a fan of leaving the stuff that's already there, and I'm comfortable with the project. So want me to make a motion, or somebody want to make a motion here? Whose district? Is this your
mine.
District?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, can you put the recommendation up? I'll make a motion to adopt the mitigated negative declaration of ordinance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act to approve the tentative tract map TR3237/N-SUB2024-0085 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and revised conditions listed in Exhibit B.
And I'll second.
The clerk will please call the roll.
Oh, Eric, just also noting to adopt the mitigated negative declaration. I don't know if I heard that part, but yeah. Okay, thank you.
You got it.
All right.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Shaw?
Yes.
And Chair White?
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Steph, for that. Some creative work on some interesting challenges there. And with that, it is the end of our hearing, so I'll entertain a motion to take all testimony and correspondence into the record.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And I'll entertain a motion to adjourn to the next regularly scheduled meeting on April 9th.
Commissioner White, Eric Hughes, before we do, I just wanted to note there was a question about the April
23rd.
As I think that we're going to cancel that meeting. We don't have any items scheduled for that day. So that is currently the intent. So,
okay. All right. Thank you.
We're happy to hear that. Thank you very much.
And I'll confirm that for sure when we send out the distribution for the April 9th.
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds good. And so we're adjourning the meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
This meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.